Well, we're talking about Hydra storage, scalable secondary storage. So I will start with an overview of the characteristics of secondary storage and how these characteristics translate to requirements for a scalable secondary storage system. So first of all, secondary storage systems store lots of data. And this means that the system has to be scalable and efficient in terms of cost per terabyte. Very often, the amount of data stored in the system grows over time. So the system has to be able to grow dynamically without disrupting normal operation. Now, backups have to fit into small backup windows. So very high write performance is essential. And since backup applications typically write long streams of data and there's a lot of duplication between those streams, to use the storage capacity efficiently, the system should do deduplication on all the data stored in the system. Data is rarely read from a secondary storage system, but when the restore is needed, it has to be done reliably and quickly. In order to do that, the system should tolerate failures and also has to provide reasonably good restore throughput and quick access to the data. Data written to secondary storage systems often has varying value. Some kinds of data are critical and should never be lost, and others, the resiliency of others can be traded for decreased storage overhead. So why is implementing a scalable secondary storage system challenging? Well, the most challenging part is implementing high-performance, decentralized global deduplication in a dynamic distributed system with deletion, and which also handles failures. Now, any of these requirements can quite easily be satisfied alone, but their combination introduces various challenges. For example, there's tension between deduplication and dynamic scalability, because when location of data becomes difficult when the system grows, and or when its configuration changes after failures. There's also tension between deduplication and on-demand deletion, because the system has to avoid deduplication against data which is already scheduled for deletion. Also, failure tolerance complicates deletion, because the deletion decisions have to be consistent in the face of failures. So Hydra Store is a scalable secondary storage system which satisfies these requirements. The project started as a research project at NEC Labs in Princeton. It was successfully commercialized, and today it is a real-world commercial system which is sold by NEC in the US and Japan. The development of the backend layer continues at Nine Lives Data in Warsaw, Poland. Nine Lives Data is a spin-off from NEC Labs, and this is the company which I'm working for. So I'm not looking for a job, but actually we're hiring. OK, so Hydra Store provides a functionality of a content addressable storage. It's a vast data repository for storing and extracting streams of blocks. It presents a single system image to the clients, but even though it's built of independent nodes, with pretty standard access methods like file system or VTL, the important feature is that dynamic capacity sharing, which means all the capacity is shared between all clients, so there are no isolated storage islands. And also, deduplication is system-wide. It means duplicates are eliminated across all data stored in the system. System also is failure-tolerant and supports on-demand deletion. Now, deletion may look like an obvious feature for a storage system, but it proved surprisingly difficult to implement. And also, many research papers completely ignored the subject, like if it weren't interesting. OK, so the content addressable storage layer provides the programming model of a repository of blocks. The blocks are content addressed, immutable, and variable sized. One thing which is sort of different is that pointers to other blocks are exposed. So this white rectangles here. Generally, when a stream of data is written as a tree of blocks, rooted at a special block called a retention root, typically a tree of blocks is, for example, corresponds to one file system snapshot. Now, the trees are actually directed at acyclic graphs due to the application, because several blocks can be shared by multiple trees. For example, this block here. There are no cycles possible because the content address is based on a secure hash of the contents. Deleting individual blocks would not be possible because there is sharing. So instead, in order to delete, entire trees have to be deleted. So when a retention node is marked for deletion, all the blocks which are only referenced from the deleted retention nodes will be garbage collected and removed. Okay. So I'll talk about the more low-level details of HydraStore, and we'll start with an overview of the architecture. HydraStore runs on a standard server-grade hardware running Linux. We expect scalability on a data center level. The system is divided into a layer of access nodes and storage nodes. The access nodes export a file system interface using protocols like NFS and SIFS. Well, the backend the access nodes can be scaled for performance, while the backend storage layers provide all the data management operations, and they can be scaled for capacity. So before moving on to describing the data organization, I'll talk about some of the requirements which I present on the first slide. How these implement these requirements requires some internal data services. So in order to provide failure tolerance, the system needs to be able to identify cases when data resiliency was reduced, for example, due to failures. And once this the reduction is identified, data has to be rebuilt quickly in order to minimize the risk of data loss. In order to achieve high read, write, and deep application performance, the system has to preserve locality of data streams to enable efficient prefetching. In order to enable dynamic system growth, the system has to, and scalability, the system has to, the data management system has to be decentralized, and load balancing has to be used to balance load between storage nodes. Also, once system configuration changes, the data has to be transferred to new locations efficiently. The application and on-demand deletion also require some data services, but we'll talk about them later on. So the base of HydraStore's failure tolerance for data is erasure coding. Each block is erasure coded into n fragments. Of these n fragments, any m fragments are original and other fragments are redundant. The redundant any m minus n fragments can be lost and the block can still be reconstructed. So in this example, where m is 5, any three fragments can be lost, and the original block can be reconstructed. Now, by varying this value of m, we can tune the overhead of the resiliency. Now, the scalability of the system is at the core of the scalability is a distributed hash table. The DHT is used for determining on which which nodes to place incoming blocks. So the content address of a block determines the node of the distributed hash table which takes care of the block. Actually, the first several bits of the content address are used to for routing data in the DHT. Now, in this example here, the block has a content address starting with bit 01, and the length of the prefix used for routing is 2, so this block is assigned to the prefix 01. Now, in order to add redundancy to the system, each prefix is divided into n components. The components are hosted on storage nodes, and the n is a system-wide constant. in the product, it's self set to 12. So in this example here, components of prefix 01 are hosted on nodes 2, var, 5, and 6. The erasure-coded fragments of a block are stored by components of the hash prefix responsible for the block. In a dynamic system, the assignment of components to storage nodes can change by using distributed consensus. For example, if storage node 1 here fails, the components will be recreated on different storage nodes. Now, initially, they don't have any data because it's just components which are recreated. However, the other components can be used to reconstruct the data on the new location. Now, components can be also moved to different locations to balance load between storage nodes. Since secure hashes are distributed uniformly, each component will roughly receive the same number of blocks, fragments. Also, balancing prevents stacking of multiple components on one storage node, since we don't want the failure of one storage node to take away multiple fragments. So how is data organized within a prefix? So starting with the incoming stream of data, it's split into blocks in variable size. And hash of each of the blocks is computed. And based on this hash, the blocks are routed through the distributed hash table. So in this example, the colors represent the prefix to which the blocks will be distributed. So let's concentrate on the ones which are assigned to prefix 01. Now, the blocks are routed to prefix 01, compressed, and erasure coded into n fragments. So within one component, the fragments are stored in a log-like structure. These are the four components of this prefix. These white boxes here are the fragments. And each of these four fragments correspond to one block. So new fragments are appended at the end of this log-like structure in the same order as in which they appeared in the incoming stream. Subsequent blocks are organized into so-called synchrons. There are three synchrons here. There's one, second one, and the third one. Now, the synchron is simply a collection of subsequently written blocks assigned to one prefix. It is about 64 megabytes in the system. Now, synchrons are divided into containers. Here's this one. The containers are actually stored on storage node disks. Actually, this is the unit of storage in the Hydra store. So in the containers, the metadata of fragments, which include their hash content address, for example, is stored separately from data. This allows all hashes of a container to be prefetched efficiently from disk without reading all the data. Now, subsequent synchrons are organized into chains by depending on the order in which they were created. This log-like organization preserves the locality of the blocks which were written. So the assumption here is that when blocks are written into the system, they'll appear in a subsequent stream in a similar order. This is what Mark talked about in the presentation on the application earlier today. So if we store them with locality, we'll be able to prefetch them efficiently. Now, unlike fragments, of which there's a large number, the number of synchrons is manageable and sufficient that they will fit into main memory. Okay, so how can we use this data organization to provide some of the data services? So first of all, in a dynamic system, what I presented is okay for a static system, but in a dynamic system, this has to be maintained. For example, when the size of the system grows, each component is split into two more components because the length of the prefix of the hash increases. So data from synchron chains is distributed based on the third bit in this example of the hash. So these containers are read sequentially. The fragments are distributed to two new containers. And finally, the original container is deleted. So let's get back to component 01. Now, as you can see, once when we split the data according to hash, the resulting containers are roughly half the size of the original ones because the hashes are distributed uniformly. So in order to keep the number of synchrons and containers manageable, we need to concatenate some adjacent containers, for example, these two here. Now, a similar thing happens during deletion when we mark some blocks for reclamation. They are removed by sweeping through the SCC, through the container, and again, they are concatenated. Adjacent synchrons are concatenated. Okay, so one of the data services we're talking about is identification of data resiliency. In our data organization, this can be done relatively simply. These gray boxes here represent containers which are missing, for example, because some disk failed. So in order to identify the missing data, we can scan the synchron chains and identify those containers which are missing. Start to two here. Now, we know that we scanned all of them because the containers are form a chain, so we know when we scan them all. Once the lost data is identified, it can be rebuilt quickly because the entire containers are read sequentially, and erasure decoding and re-encoding produces the missing fragments, which can be stored in the missing containers. Now, other data services include transferring data after the system configuration changes. So in order to do that, we can locate when a component changes its location, we can locate the new location of the component using routing in the DHT. Once this is done, we can transfer entire containers again sequentially, getting good performance. Now, data application requires many of the data services. Since we want to do global data application in the system, we need to be able to detect the duplicate block in the entire system. So part of that is routing based on the content address of a block. The DHT routing allows us to find the component responsible for a given block. Now, since the application is inline, it has to be high performance, so we prefetch entire containers for streams of duplicates. And since, as I said, since block hashes are stored separately, we can do this efficiently. Now, some features of the data services related to the application is, for example, once the block is routed to the appropriate component, it has to locate a complete chain. Now, why is completeness important? For example, we need completeness to be able to say that some block is definitely not a duplicate. Also, if due to the deletion interactions, if a block was scheduled for deletion, we should not eliminate it as a duplicate. Therefore, we need to only perform duplicate elimination on a node which has an up-to-date containers up to date. So in this example, there are two complete chains. So we just pick one and route the application query to that chain, to the storage node which has that chain. Now, locally, a candidate is found. I'll not get into details how this is done. But once a candidate is found, it has to be verified. Because it should not eliminate the duplicate against the block, which is actually not readable. If we suffered enough failures that some data was lost, we cannot, or not accessible currently, we cannot eliminate the duplicate against it. So using this organization, we can simply check that all the containers for the synchron in which this block is present are available. Deletion also requires some data services. Deletion is generally organized as distributed garbage collection. I'll not talk about a lot of details how this is done, since I would not have time in this talk. For details, you can check in the paper. Generally, it is done using a per-block reference counter, in the reference counter are stored per fragment. Deletion has to be fairly tolerant, so the reference counter values are calculated independently on pure container chains. Now, to solve this problem of interference with duplicate elimination, for now, there is a special read-only phase for the block tree traversal when the new values of counters are calculated, and then space is actually reclaimed in the background. Okay, so this graph presents shows how the system behaves and how all these data services work in practice. So we have a four storage node system to which the client is writing data. We get around 600 megabytes. Now, at this point, one of the storage nodes dies. And quickly, the system reconfigures itself by, just as you saw on the slide about DHT. And this performance drops to around 400 megabytes per second. At the same time, around this point, the system identifies lost data and immediately begins reconstructions. However, in order not to impact the write throughput too much, the reconstructions are throttled so that the user writing can fit into the backup window. Once the user stops writing, reconstructions go full speed. This graph presents the write performance of reconstructions. As you can see, it is about 150 megabytes per second, which is exactly 1/4 of the original write speed. So reconstruction is pretty quick. Now, reconstruction is finished quickly, and once the user starts writing again, he is around 450 megabytes per second. Then the failed node is restarted, and the system again reconfigures, and it reaches around 550 megabytes per second. Now, this is not 600 for two reasons. One is that, as you saw, in the data data application queries have to go to a node which has a complete chain. Therefore, the node here, with the node which failed, does not have a complete chain because it doesn't have the data. And the real reason of the performance drop here is that data is being transferred from this data which was written here is not present on the failed storage node. So it has to be transferred in the background. And this is slightly impacting performance. But once all the data transfer completes, we'll again get to 600 megabytes per second. Now, how does the system scale? We have this small experiment of 12 storage nodes. As you can see, this is write performance in a stable system. That means the system was created with 2, 4, 6, and so on storage nodes. And we evaluated the write performance. As you can see, it scales almost linearly. Now, the second graph is the performance when the system grows dynamically. So we start with two storage node system and can keep writing at maximum throughput and extend the system. As you can see, up to six storage nodes, that's three times growth of the system. There is virtually no drop in performance. After that point, we start hitting the problem that only these two storage nodes have complete chains so they can do the application. Of course, after the system stabilizes, we'll again reach this performance of the stable case. Now, this is, of course, an artificial scenario because you can't really expect the user to be writing at full speed when the system has grown six times. Okay, so that's about it. Thank you. Any questions?
Hi, Mark Ulrich from HP Labs. First, I just wanted to point out that the interface you have, it seems to be the same as was used in our jumbo store paper, namely the trees of HDAGs and the like. And could you say a little bit about how you do the inline deduplication? I admit to a certain amount of curiosity.
I mean, you know, we have this. We based on the assumption of the same assumption Mark was talking about that streams are duplicates from streams, so we can prefetch efficiently the hashes of blocks which we expect to be duplicates.
There's too many chain metadata index to actually load all of it into RAM, right?
I mean, no. There are enough. Each storage node doesn't have that much chains. It has like 30 chains, perhaps. So it is if one index around 1 megabyte, it's really just fine to for one stream it's just like 30 megabytes. So we can get put a lot of chain reading of duplicate chains into RAM.
I'll talk to you offline.
Okay.
Neeraj Tolia, HP Labs. One small question about the evaluation. So when you're writing data out and you're detecting duplicates, and do you actually read data back from disk to make sure that it's what you expect?
No. We just do verification by hash.
I mean, Yeah, I personally believe that the odds of a collision are very low, but there are systems that do read them back.
Yes, but then we will not really be able to get the good performance, right?
Okay. All right. And the second thing is, so if currently the interface to your system is, you mentioned in the second slide or so, is an NFS or SIFS kind of thing,
yes.
Right? Have you thought about, so because of that, if a client is doing backup, it's shipping all the data to you and then you do dedup, have you thought about maybe exposing a content addressable interface to clients itself so they might be able to figure out what data is in common and only ship those bytes across the network that are unique?
We haven't thought about that. There is one special like client, which is the replication engine. You can replicate between multiple Hydra store installations, and this does basically what you said, right? But this really means that the system would have to do the deduplication on its own, right?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Thank you.